Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I am Robert Bound. Hold on to your seats, as on today's Whirlwind Worldwide Art Discussion, we'll be visiting exhibitions in London, Paris and Los Angeles, and our jet-setting pilot through the whole thing is art critic and curator Francesca Gavin. Welcome to the programme, Francesca. Fresh from a plane, but wearing a fur stole. I mean,
yes,
God, I'm lucky.
I basically decided I had to combat like exhaustion with glamour.
You look fantastic.
Thank
you look like
you.
A sort of a beautiful Tamara de Lempicka heroine from
Thank
the 30s,
you.
Right?
I'm feeling very out of the century. I've had a man come up to me in a secondhand shop in Paris the other week and tell me, oh my God, I look like I don't come from now. So
that's
exciting.
I would take that as a compliment. 21st century, before we get into the heaviosity of three fantastic art shows, should we rate the 21st century out of 10 very quickly?
The 21st century,
yeah.
How's it doing?
Let's just quickly do that.
Based on this year or generally the past 16 years?
I don't know,
years.
I'm finding it difficult. Difficult to kick off this year. I think this year it smells like something on the bottom of your foot.
Yeah, I mean, I would give this year a minus two.
Yeah, okay.
You know, generally I'm okay with the century so far.
Should we give it a seven? Should we give it a 6.5?
No, I think we need an even five until it needs to do better. It needs improvement.
Francesca Gavin there, our resident art critic, giving the 21st century 5 out of 5. What will she give a new show at the Barbican by the Welsh artist Bedda Williams? It's called The Gulch. All sorts of things spring to mind when we think about the gulch.
Yeah,
I think about a glitter gulch. It sounds like a rude word, but it's not. Tell us about this show,
Francesca. Bedda Williams is a really weird artist. I mean, obviously, he's Welsh.
Put that on the poster.
No, he's amazing.
Don't say it's because he's Welsh.
No, he is Welsh. I mean, he's represented Wales at the Venice
yes.
Biennale in the past. He did an incredible video for that. A lot of his work is video-based, and they're really surreal and strange and has, like, the most strange take on banality and humour. So him taking over the Barbican Curve, which is a really odd space anyways. It literally is a sort of curved, narrow gallery space.
Yeah.
He's kind of cut it up into almost like a strange, disjointed narrative. I didn't see all the aspects in it because sometimes it comes to life in different ways. Allegedly, there's a talking goat.
Now, this is the thing. This is the one thing that I think this might even have been in the press release or something. Right?
Yes,
I alluded to it.
Listen,
too.
I saw the goat. The goat didn't talk to me, but there were some other really. I mean, things are presented in a really strange way. There's a great video called Flexure, which is about a hypnotist who has a strange ranting person living next door. Kind of, it's like a weird take on like the materiality of VHS and our relationship to hypnosis and like noisy neighbors. And there's something about Bedda Williams that's really drawn to this sort of strange, very British kind of discomfort.
Yes, he's fantastic. I kind of feel like he's the contemporary artist that I want to be the next Steve McQueen, as in be an artist that makes movies.
Well, I think he'd probably do like a really weird, unsettling
great.
Wes Anderson.
Yes, he would be a bit like that. I'd love him to get his teeth into a J.G. Ballard novel or something like that. Do you mean?
It's really interesting. It sort of took sculpture and installation, all those kind of elements, and made it into something narrative in here. It's not a comfortable show. Sometimes you're sitting and watching a video at like an office table. You have to look up really hard to see things.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, there's definitely lots of humour here. I mean, he's a really interesting artist and definitely worth going to view. If nothing else, just to be baffled.
And it's one of those things, do you get the sense that this show, obviously it's a site-specific work or a series of works, do you get the feeling he turned up and kind of went back to a studio and figured bits and bobs out? Or does it work? Do you think it would work somewhere else? Or does it work? Is that maybe the joy of it, that it only works in the curve at the Barbican?
Well, he's definitely taken advantage of the space.
Yeah.
But Bedwa's one of those artists that you could take his film pieces and put them in a different location or elements of it. It's very elemental, this piece. So I think his stuff does kind of live beyond it. But he always takes advantage of space. So, for example, when he was doing the Venice Biennale, he ended up taking advantage and like responding to the whole mosaic and stone history there. Or he did a great show at Glasgow International a few years ago at Tramway with a video called Echt, which is almost like a dystopian post-Ballardian future where I sort of yobby people take over the world, and there's like
we're back to 2016 again.
Yeah, it is political. There's definitely some politics in here, and very much taking on the British class structure. But
and
it's weird.
Is this show The Gulch? Is it almost like cutting a slice of Bedda Williams' cake and seeing each stratified section? Is it true to his work and his practice and his kind of preoccupation?
Definitely. I mean, before he was doing so well with video work, he was kind of known for sculptural aspects, and there's definitely some of those there. The sort of exhibition ends with these strange shadows of those Japanese cats waving their arms around you, the good luck cats.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's a strange show. There's like mannequins with their bums out wiggling around wearing like American Letterman jackets. It's an unusual exhibition. And that's the humor, the oddness, the kind of voiceovers, the take on class. And that's all very Bedouin.
It sounds fantastic. It sounds like a must-see. It's almost impossible to kind of get it into three neat paragraphs.
Well, you might
it?
Get to see the talking goat.
Okay, yeah. We will always have the talking goat.
Yes.
Yeah. It's The Gulch by Bedouin Williams. It's on at the Barbican until January 2017. Get yourself down there.
Mm.
See the talking goat. Apparently it exists. We're going to go to Paris now, to the Palais de Tokyo. This is Tino Segal, Francesca. He's an interesting artist as well. He's doing something here which is something that has its successes and has its sort of, it has its hits and its misses, I suppose. What do we call it? An intervention in the stuff that sits there already. How has he done it?
And well, this exhibition is probably the best exhibition you'll see this year for me.
Ah.
I think it's incredible. It takes five of his works. They're all performance-based. They're all kind of interactive. Everyone during FIAC, during the art fair, was talking about this show. Part of the interesting thing about Tino Segal, you won't find a catalogue on him. You won't find many interviews on him. He's very kind of, it's much more about experiencing something. And I had one of the best experiences of art that I've ever had with this piece called Progress, where you initially have like a little boy or a little girl talking to you about progress, who leads you to a teenager, and you have a kind of similar idea. Then I had a guy in his 30s say, "I love you." So we start talking about intimacy and relationship with our parents. It was crazy. And then an old man, and it was like 45 minutes of therapy. It was fabulous. It was amazing. And then it came out into this much larger space. It takes over the whole of the Palais de Tokyo. And it included the performance work that was in the Turbine Hall at the Tate, elements of collaborative performance pieces he's done with Philippe Perrino and Pierre Huyghe. It's a really great show.
It sounds absolutely fascinating. It's one of those things. I wonder what his working practices are like. I mean, this is one of those. He's one of those people that, I guess he's one. When you think of an artist's studio, you want to think of kind of blobs of clay on the floor and slabs of paint stuck on the walls and things. He seems like a person that he's got a rehearsal room and he's got a lot of email contacts and it all lives in his head until it comes to fruition in the space in which he's kind of let loose to work in. Have you got any idea how he puts this stuff together?
From what I've gleaned from knowing some of the people who've partaken in performances by him in the past, having met a lot of dancers or also art critics or writers or people interested in performance, I think it's very collaborative. I think he's very open. There's a huge amount of effort made on casting. Obviously, all the people taking part in this first work, for example, had to be bilingual in French and English, and also open to a certain kind of communication. I feel like Tina Segal must be doing a lot of kind of rehearsal, apart from the preparation that you really feel like. There's an amazing artwork here that was also included in the last Documenta, where you're in pure blackness and there's a dance performance around you in pure blackness.
Yeah.
And it takes like 25 minutes for your eyes to adjust and then you'll actually see the piece, which is amazing and very disconcerting. And someone was calling it euphoric and I could see that relationship to it.
And something about patience there as well.
Yes,
when you feel like you can go around a biennale or an art fair or even a show that you've paid to go to at a gallery, and you want to see, you give every painting three seconds or something of your time. This is an exercise in that, isn't it?
And I also think that in terms of like feeling how his things change and develop, I do think he's definitely responding to each different group of performers that he's working with, because I've seen iterations of these things in different places. I mean, that first Progress piece took place at the Guggenheim in New York. Other pieces were in Documenta. There was a great show of a bunch of his works at Martin's Gropius Bau in Berlin in 2015. So, I mean, he's been... But every time you see the work, it's a totally different piece because you're going to have different performers and performers come in and out. It's very intense, I think, and you can feel that intensity. There's a lot of focus, but the results are totally different than any other artwork I think you'll ever see.
And how did it make you feel? Your specific, individual, unique experience of it. I mean, none more so than a response to any painting or something.
My hair stood up on end.
Yeah.
I literally felt like, firstly, I never felt so involved in something I viewed. I literally felt like I was part of it. And then it was unlike, I was blown away. it's a very visceral experience because you're often using your body, or I've never talked so much during an art experience. But yeah, it's out of all the exhibitions I've seen of him, this is the one where I really got to grips with what was going on and felt part of it in some way.
And I suppose it's rare that you go to see any contemporary art and the onus is on you. You will be judged as much as the artist and the art will be judged. I suppose you feel like the communion between artist and viewer, or art and viewer, is that much narrower here.
Yeah, it's totally different. Yeah. The whole dynamic between viewer, it's, in a way, it's almost like if you give more, rather than be passive, if you end up being more active, you get more out of the work. So, which is really different, because most artworks are based on much more of a passive receiving kind of experience, whereas Tina Segal really is about sort of tempting you to be an active participant in what they're creating.
How poetically said as well, how poetically put.
Thank you.
It is Tino Segal at the Palais de Tokyo. You've got until the 18th of December to go to that. And go you must, says Francesca Gavin, whose final choice today is Samara Scott. She's a Sunday Painters artist. They always do an interesting thing. I saw one of her things at Frieze the year before this, last year. Mm-hmm. The year before this is last year, that's what we call it,
yes.
Don't we? That's all normal people that can speak, that's how they describe things.
Yes.
Why is she on your list, Francesca?
Well, this is a lovely Brits Abroad show, but I think it's kind of interesting because it's representative of this whole wave of people heading to LA, particularly among emerging artists,
yeah,
and showing their work there and doing really well there. But I also think she's an artist worth highlighting. I've been looking at her work for many years. Frieze was definitely a breakout thing for her in 2015. She made this incredible pool of jelly-like liquid and lots of detritus. She was also the winner of the Day's Converse Art Prize a few years before that. Her practice is largely made of taking colorful bits of plastic, bits of food, strange colouring things, a lot of detritus, like throwaway objects, and creating these kind of sculptural things or in sort of spaces, in floors. She's done a lot of things with rugs. And the work is very beautiful. She's got
her
own kind of...
They make you feel strange. They make you feel odd because they're things that aren't made of the things that they should be in the places that they are, if you know what I mean.
Well, it's also got... A lot of the times they're almost semi-food stuff. There's almost a disgusting element to it in a little way. But she makes it beautiful because partly she's an incredibly good sense of colour.
Mm.
So there's this very kind of pastel palette into a lot of the things she uses. And you can feel she's really kind of trying to push how she shows something. So she'll like take over the entire walls of a building or upset the floor or insert things into blinds against windows. So it's very much like pushing art away from expected locations.
Yeah. And at Frieze, it was really effective because there's so many, you know, there are so many things hanging on the wall that to have that floor lowered or to have it messed around with and then have this uncanny weird goo and these things swimming about in it was really strange. I mean, it must have been the most photographed piece at Frieze a couple of years ago.
And her work feels very, very fresh as a result of that. And I think it'll go down exceptionally well in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And she's drawing on that kind of heritage and the ephemera and the colours and the
pastel colour palette and all the rest of it. It feels quite Los Angeles.
I mean, it's almost like she's doing like somewhere between a sunset and a trash can, like a garbage dump and like beauty. There's like it's a really interesting midpoint between those things. But I also am really interested in artists who are using the throwaway, the kind of ephemeral, the available. And I think that's a really interesting direction to be going in at this moment of constant production where we're seeing people like with very high production levels and a lot of people focusing on the object as something that's saleable. With Samara's work, sometimes you'll wonder how long it will last, but it's still incredible because of that. So, I mean, Samara and Tina Segal are both making
work. The three artists you've mentioned there, they are difficult to monetize in certain ways. They are maybe Biennale artists rather than art fair artists.
Or institutional in some way.
Yeah,
Samara,
exactly.
A little less so.
Yeah.
I think you could still have a thing. The piece from Frieze was bought up by the Modern Forms Collection, so I went and saw it in their offices the other day, and it's incredible. It's beautiful seeing it in this, like, Georgian Grosvenor Street building, and it works great in that kind of domestic office space. But the other thing, I think that's a really interesting moment, though, that we're kind of driven in desiring to see things that are more
One-offs, perhaps, as well, right? That's performances. Performances are great, one, especially when it makes the your hair stand on end, as Tino Segal did.
Completely.
Okay, so that's Samara Scott. She's at the Sunday Painter Gallery pop-up in Los Angeles until the 20th November. Tino Segal is a must-see, says Francesca. That's on at the Palais de Tokyo in Paris until the 18th of December. We kicked off with Bera Williams at the Barbican's Curve. His show is called The Gulch, and it's on until January next year. That brings us to the end of the show. Francesca Gavin, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
For getting straight off a plane, coming straight into the studio and wearing a fur. We won't pretend it's not necessary here in the chilly confines of Studio 2.
Nothing wrong with Fox.
Nothing wrong with Fox. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review. I've been Robert Bound. The show is produced by Holly Fisher, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when Andrew Muller will be with Will Hodgkinson in the studio for our music discussion. But for the time being, for me, Robert Bound, thanks for tuning in.